Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Liquid Lounge. Today's a special edition program. Today we're going to have a guest that's unusual to the internet marketing side of the community that deals with the ocean. We're going to talk about social marketing. Social marketing is a unique application once you start to understand it, however you start to realize how powerful it can be. Liquid Lounge is a production of the Blue Green Network. I'm Ken English. I'm the producer and host. Today, in the studio, so to speak, is Dr. Ron Capps. He's known widely as the niche prof. Dr. Capps, are you there?
I am, Ken. Thank you for having me on the call.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on the call. And before we even start, I see a second caller from 360 as an area code. Who is that?
Anna Martin.
Anna, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. I put you back on hold. I just wanted to see who was on the line.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Capps. The purpose of Liquid Lounge over the last several months that I've been doing this show is to communicate a wider message of the importance of environmental issues as they focus on the ocean. I've discovered, to my dismay, issues such as shark finning. So many sharks are being killed. They're on the verge of extinction. Coral reef decline. Problems with global warming. Everybody's aware of that. But smaller elements, planting trees in Haiti, all of which are social groups that need to communicate. And this internet platform, as you and I have discussed, is one way of doing that. But I'd like you to explain to me further and expand on what I do know, but recognizing that there's going to be a number of people here who really don't know what social marketing is, even what Web 2.0 is per se. Can you bring it down to that level right now for us?
Well, I can certainly try, Ken. For a reference point, I've been around both the internet as well as social issues for a long time. I'm old enough that I remember Haight-Ashbury. I remember Sathergate in Berkeley. I remember Chicago. And I remember the call for people born in my generation, which was 1947, to be socially active and to cherish what we live in here, that is basically a participatory democracy, which means that we have an obligation socially to hold those people and issues accountable for the betterment of all. And we do not hold cotton to the idea that we could just passively stand on the side and not express our feelings about what is going on around us. Unfortunately, over the past decades, we've seen that ability to erode. For example, if you go back to the convention in Chicago, when you began to see a shutting down of political participation and political demonstration to the point that now, if someone were to have a social issue that they wanted to bring to the attention of the public, and one of the ways traditionally in the past to have done that would have been to form a protest where news media and politicians might gather. And now that has been banned and is basically illegal. And yes, you have the right to assemble, and yes, you have the right to bring your issue to the public, but you really don't have the right to bring it to the public in front of the cameras because you may be across town from where you really need to be to make the issue needed to be shown and brought to the public's eye. All of that has began to disappear, though, within the last 1 to 2 years with the evolution of online technology. And in fact, one of the primary uses of the internet for people that are concerned with environmental issues and issues such as growing trees and reforestation in Haiti, and other social issues is to spread that message to a global audience via the internet, because everyone, as you're doing right now, has access to their own broadcast media via platforms like podcasting, blog talk radio, streaming media, all of the video sharing sites. You're able to get your message out and get it to be seen by others. And that's a remarkable thing. People look at the internet and they think of social media and social marketing, and the first thing they think of is how to make money online. Well, that's really probably not the best use or the most prolific use of media and online work. In fact, the definition of social marketing originally was to market that as social issues, primarily health and other issues such as you're talking about here, not the marketing of how to sell a particular product online, but rather how to share a social issue and market that issue to the public at large.
So essentially, you can utilize this platform to gather new members, or at least to communicate to them better than in text. I mean, you can write books, but not everybody reads books. Almost everybody can listen to a message if they've got the patience, and part of it is the patience issue. The internet has made it just an amazing situation. Would you define, or as best as you can, really for me, the difference between podcasting and social radio like blog talk radio?
Well, podcasting was the first evolution, and primarily it was designed for people to be able to go online and record a show that would be submitted to various audio directories or podcast directories. And they were called podcast directories because the primary listening audience for those shows were people that would go into places like iTunes or other directories and download them to their iPods for listening to when they were out and about, playing when they were out walking, or as entertainment and information, much like the old books on tapes. And so that was originally where the term podcasting comes from. It was broadcasting to be played back on iPods via MP3s and the like. Platforms like Blog Talk Radio are more in line with your traditional broadcast media, except they're available online, and they're a live medium, whereas a podcast may or may not be a live medium. Podcasts could be something that I merely record and then make available for distribution via iTunes and the like. The show right now, as we know, you already have someone on the phone that is able to call in, just like the early days of radio when I was growing up with it in the 50s and 60s. So this is more participatory, and the participation on Blog Talk Radio can be immediate feedback, which is something that's not available with most podcasts.
Well, certainly that immediate feedback can be enhanced by the chat function. Not everybody participates in it, which is fine, but the realization is that you and I can have this conversation, or I can have this conversation with Nadine Patrice, the Executive Director of Operation Greenleaves, and somebody sitting in a different city, a different country, could actually type in a question, and you'd see it, and you could respond to it. Isn't that a pretty good relationship?
Well, it's a very powerful way to open the door to the development of a relationship. If someone has a concern or a question, you can address it right away, whereas with a traditional podcast or most of the old static media, it would be a matter of having to write an email or write a letter and then wait to get a response for the question, if it came at all, whereas now it can be addressed during the actual program itself.
Well, one of the other extensions, I guess, of that is Cindy Dawson's initiative as the teleseminar coach, part of the faculty that you're developing for the School of Social Marketing. So I guess it'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to talk a little bit about the School of Social Marketing. But while we've gone from podcast to the blog talk radio, where does teleseminar fit in? Is that in between those two extremes?
Teleseminars can cover a multitude of areas. One, you could actually conduct a teleseminar via Blog Talk Radio, although traditionally they're conducted on recording or call-in platforms that are made available to social groups or other marketers basically free of charge. For example, if someone has a social issue and they wanted to interview someone about that particular issue and they wanted to have other people available on the call to listen to it, to record it for whatever reasons, there are platforms out there that cost absolutely no money other than the cost of the phone call, but you can host up to 250 people on a call. That would be like renting a room at the Holiday Inn and gathering people together, but in this case, your people could be coming from around the globe to share in the information. It could be held for things such as organizational meetings. It could be held for distribution of information. It could be held for a multitude of reasons. It could even be held for distribution of news to the media, because after you complete the teleseminar, you would have a recording of that. You could place it in the media room. The journalists and other people could come in and access the call later and then give it even wider distribution.
Well, I'd like to give a couple minutes of time to Cindy Dawson. I've got a clip of the little conversation that you had with her that we've been uploading on some videos. And, you know, I definitely want to talk about that video application and the impact of boot camp that we've been working on. But let me play a little of Cindy, and then you could pick up that comment. Is that okay?
That'll be fine.
Hi, this is Ron Katz. Some people call me the Niche Prof. And today we're lucky enough to have with us the teleseminar coach, Ms. Cindy Dawson. I've been privileged to know Cindy for a couple of years now, and Cindy has been very efficient and is becoming increasingly well known as someone that can take your words and your thoughts and bring them out of you in the form of a teleseminar, as well as how to conduct teleseminars with other leading authorities and thought leaders in your field. And Cindy, we're very pleased to announce, is going to be one of the adjunct faculty members of the new School of Social Marketing, because with her skills, as well as the other faculty members, we're dedicated and committed to providing you with the best quality, world-class faculty to help you achieve your hopes and dreams. So without further ado, Cindy, welcome to the call.
Well, thank you, Ron. I appreciate your willingness to have me here today.
A lot of the people may not be that familiar with you yet, Cindy, although that will be changing as it has over the last couple of years. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to doing teleseminars and becoming the teleseminar coach?
Well, actually, that's kind of an interesting story. I started my internet marketing career so many years ago, I've forgotten, sometime around the turn of the century. And I tried, like everybody, to get involved in any way I could, and I wasn't really sure what my thing was, you know, whether it was ebooks or whatever. So I started out trying to write ebooks, and I realized it was just totally laborious for me. And I found myself increasingly frustrated by trying to sit down and write. And I realized that all my life I had been an audio person. So as soon as I would finish an audiobook, an ebook, one of the very first things I would do is convert it into audio, so that I could listen to it myself. And then the thought suddenly hit me, Cindy, you're doing this backwards. So I suddenly realized, duh, I should be doing this the easy way. So I started out creating teleseminars, and then from my teleseminars, I went the other direction and developed them into ebooks or e-courses. So that happened around, I'd say maybe 2003, 2004, something like that. So I've actually been doing teleseminars primarily for about roughly 5 years now, because that was right at the beginning of 2003. So about 5.5 years now.
Now, you said doing it the easy way. How is this the easy way?
Well, for me, the easy way is audio. It's always easier for me to put words into thought and consistent themes by speaking. It's harder for me to sit down at a piece of paper or look at a computer screen that's blank and try to conceive of what I'm going to say. It's just easier for me to put thoughts together if I'm speaking with somebody, like we're speaking right now. It makes more sense to me, and it's easier to form thoughts.
Well, the other thing is it's generally more conversational.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And it sounds more genuine to me because it's my true voice. It's the way I really speak. I mean, not just the literal part, but, you know, the teaching part, the training part, the encouragement part, everything is just in my voice. So I like that. And when I write, I have a tendency sometimes to get past that and get into the English grammar that we were all taught in school. So it's just easier for me to talk what I want to talk about.
Well, and that's an interesting point. A lot of people don't realize that different people have different learning styles. Yours is an oral learning style. And if you go back historically, human beings are an oral creature. I mean, the written word and the Gutenberg press came along long after we were social creatures out there sharing recommendations and tales of yore, by going back to the days of Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey. That wasn't written. It was something that was an oral tradition.
Exactly. It was passed down from generation to generation orally, and that was a social gathering as well, because they used to gather around at night, the fire or whatever was the central location in the winter, you know, whatever would keep them warm, or in the summer, whatever would keep them cool, and they would pass down these stories from generation to generation. So you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
And the thing that you have going there is a clue for our listeners that when you're doing a teleseminar, far more than the minutiae or the very specific little things, they want stories that they can remember and that they can identify with, because that is what will have a lasting nature with them.
Absolutely, absolutely. People like stories. There's something exciting, there's something captivating about a story. It has a plot, it has a beginning and a middle and an end, and it's more bonding, at least for me, it's more bonding. It's also more human, and it has the more personal touch. And I just love that. I love that because people learn faster with stories than they do with just facts and unrelated data. So I totally agree.
Well, one of the other things that anyone listening...
You're listening to Liquid Lounge. This is Ken English. I'm with Cindy Dawson with the Niche Prof, Dr. Ron Capps. Dr. Capps is in the lounge today, and we're having a conversation about social marketing. There's a couple people that are on the line. One that I'm actually going to take on right now, Dr. Capps, this is Nadine Patrice. Nadine Patrice is the executive director of Operation Greenleaves in Miami. And Nadine has had the first, well, we've been doing this radio program for a couple of times now. On Saturday, we did one specifically. And I'd just like Nadine to say hello, and then we're going to go back to talking about what we're talking about. So, Nadine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ken. This is a fascinating subject, very interesting. I've been listening to it, and I'm really happy to be able to log in and participate in some way.
Well, say hello to Dr. Capps. He is the Niche Prof, and you have one of the narrowest niches I've ever seen, and that's planting trees in Haiti.
Yes.
So you guys need to talk to each other. Say hello to Professor Capps.
Hello, Professor Capps. Hopefully, I have a chance one day to meet you, but it's been very interesting listening to you for a few minutes I've been on. And like Ken said, my niche is kind of small. It's inspiring people to understand that we do, that it's a global community, although Haiti is another country, but we do need to help reforest Haiti because environmentally we're connected. So that's our mission, that's our challenge, I should say, to encourage people to help us plant more trees in Haiti.
Well, it's very good to meet you on the call today, Nadine. And you have a prime example of, while it may be a very narrow focus, it's a very important focus. And by being able to use the social media platforms that are now available out there, you're able to bring that needed light to the need for reforestation in Haiti and reach a global audience that can bond together and help you achieve that goal. Earlier when I was talking with Cindy Dawson, I talked about hopes and dreams. They aren't always financial hopes and dreams. Frequently, there are ways that you can plug back into the community and the global community and leave a testimony that shows others of your concern and basically build a legacy that you mattered, that it was important that you be here and you were willing to step up and tackle these issues that maybe otherwise might have gone by the wayside.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
Professor Capps, the unique application of social marketing, Twitter, Facebook, and many of the others, could the message of planting a tree in Haiti be spread through Twitter?
Oh, absolutely. For example, when we had the case of the tragedies in the typhoon in Myanmar and the earthquake in China. The first news out regarding them was not by the news media, but it was via Twitter. And we increasingly are seeing that news is being reported first on Twitter and other microblogging platforms, and consequently the news media are now requiring journalists to become active participants and monitors because they know where the news story is. So if there's a story to be shared about reforestation in Haiti and the impact that that has not only on Haiti but upon the Western Hemisphere and the globe itself, then you can build a buzz and you can make connections with other people that may or may not have even been aware that there was an issue there. So what it does is it brings an issue to what I call the state of heightened awareness. Because normally a person is not going out scouring around to find a social issue they can latch onto. Someone has to basically hit them over the head with a 2x4 and bring it to their attention. If you think back, very few people were aware of the plight of the baby harp seal until all of a sudden they were confronted with video and photographs of this, you know, cute little white seal with big charcoal black eyes looking at, and then all of a sudden seeing their coat turn to red as they were being bashed with clubs. That created a lasting impact. It brought the issue to a heightened awareness in the public.
Well, it just did it right there. You know, and, you know, it's amazing what the mind does conjure up. Nadine, before Dr. Capps and I go back into you know, some other social marketing applications, would you just share with him and whoever listens ultimately the message that you got from the contact in Haiti about the internet program?
Yes, with the internet radio program, it's really great because we're able to reach people from everywhere, even Sweden. But this week, I was so enthusiastic. I received an email from one of our partner organizations and a listener in Léogâne, Haiti, which is not even the capital. It's a small little town in the southern part of Haiti, where not only they said how educational the show was for him, the manager, but also he had all the youth and all the young people listening to the program. And fortunately, we had the show about global warming. So that's just encouraging me. And that's also showing how much reach you can have with the radio program and the internet and putting the message out there.
Well, it's, certainly, Nadine, you're encouraged to hang on there for a little bit if you want, but I'm going to shift back to Dr. Capps, and we're going to talk about some things that are coming up.
Wonderful. I'll listen for a little bit, and then I'm heading back to my office.
All right, very good. Thank you. Nadine Patrice is the Executive Director of Operation Greenleaves in Miami. You can check it out online at oglhaiti.com, oglhaiti.com. Ron, the impact conference that's coming up August 22nd through the 24th. Touch on that a little bit because these are the type of events that people like Nadine and others should attend because, in my opinion, because it shows something that's a little different about the internet. Perhaps you can just talk about it. I know Nadine won't get to Philadelphia for this one, but they're held in South Florida. They're held in various places. You know, Mark Hendricks has a program to learn how to be more successful, is the term. It's really a business. Now, you got the School of Social Marketing, and you're really going to teach these skills to people like Nadine. Is that not the goal?
Yeah, the goal of the School of Social Marketing is to teach a global community of how they can use the social marketing tools, the social media platforms, whether they be things like Blog Talk Radio, podcasts, social networks like MySpace, Facebook, microblogs like Twitter or Pounce or Tumblr, blogs and other media, effectively and with what I call an economy of action. One of the reasons so many people are not getting involved, they look at it and they say, I don't have time for all of this, or it's a place only for kids. When in fact the demographics of the audience now online using these sources is not your kid. As the commercial would say, it's not your daddy's Buick. Well, the internet is not your teenager's internet. It's being used exclusively and extensively by many organizations, both private, public, and individual interest groups, to reach out and build an audience or constituency and to connect with them. So that is one of the misunderstandings. And through the School of Social Marketing, we're going to show not only people that, quote, want to be internet marketers, but more importantly, people that are active in social issues, political issues, and brick-and-mortar businesses, how they can use the tools of the internet to share their message, to build their audience, to build their constituency, and to keep informed with what the latest news is and the trends before they become past the point where they can take action. So that's one of the goals of the School of Social Marketing. In addition to Cindy Dawson, you're quite modest, Ken. You're going to be working with people, showing them how to use Blog Talk Radio. It is truly an international faculty. I have Stuart Tan from Singapore, who is a well-known and well-respected best-selling author and executive director of Adam Koo Learning Technologies. We have Mari Smith talking to people about how to use Facebook. We have Coach Deb Misick from Hawaii that will show them how to use things such as Twitter. Coach Deb was the author of the first book on new media, and she's the co-author of the upcoming Twitter Handbook. And we have other people such as Charles Heflin, who has a social marketing blueprint and is SEO 2020. And we have a world-class faculty of approaching, I believe, about 15 people right now that will show them how to effectively use all of the various resources that are available to them out there. Now, that's a little bit different from what we were talking about when you talked about the upcoming event in Philadelphia. That event is something that is tied to a friend of mine, Ken MacArthur's book that he released called The Impact Factor. And the impact event will be in Philadelphia the 22nd through the 24th of this month. I know that we'll be up there speaking, doing interviews, and broadcasting from there. And it will be a chance for people to come together and discover how they can give their life the tools that they can go about having impact on the world around them, how they can have impact by attracting people to their cause or their issue or their business, and how they can brand themselves effectively and distribute the news and information to a global audience rather than a local audience. So that is what we have coming up in the next week and a half.
Well, the impact exercise that we've been doing with uploading some videos and posting some things has been really quite interesting. And what it's done for me is given me a focus on something to follow around to see how keywords and tags and things like that work, because it is very confusing when you first enter into the game of, I guess it's officially search engine optimization, but it is utilizing certain applications or certain techniques to just make yourself rank higher and do better. I found out and probably from you a site called TipZoo. And I had signed up a while back and didn't use it and got a notice that said inactivity, we're going to cancel it. So I'd post something. And then next time around, inactivity, we're going to cancel it. And I just posted another thing. And what I realized in doing it the third time was that it allowed me to lay out a title called Social Marketing Radio is Something to Talk About, and to explain in my own words what the Blog Talk platform does, and include in it an Arbitron report or a segment of it that I'm quite sure that I got from you, but it's showing that 13% of Americans age 12 or older have listened to online radio in the past week. That 25% of all Americans age 12 or older have a profile on a social networking website such as MySpace, Facebook, or LinkedIn. And nearly two-thirds of the people who listen to online radio have an account on a social platform. And I realized as I was doing this and looking at the numbers that the people I'm trying to reach are not my age. They're not your age for the most part. I mean, that's the group that we're turning around in. But the people who have the most benefit that we could reach are the younger people who are growing up in this. Is that true?
Well, it is true to a degree, but it can be misleading. For example, today I shared a study that has just been released talking about the growth in the social networks globally. In North America, the growth has slowed somewhat, but we're still talking millions and millions of people, over 100 million. But globally, it's expanding exponentially. So we are really developing a global audience. And I also posted another article talking about how many people think that it is primarily a young person's market, age 17 to 24, when in fact, if you get into and look at it in greater depth and detail, it is actually being used far more effectively by people ages 29 and older. So you have to sometimes dig through and look behind the numbers and realize that some people are making broad generalizations based upon a limited number of sites or their own agenda. There are many platforms out there other than MySpace or Facebook. Twitter is growing rapidly. LinkedIn, for example, is a professional network that people that are concerned with issues such as you're talking about here would find a professional community that they could associate with on those same issues. And that's definitely not a young person's platform. Then you have other sites such as Eons, and their primary demographic is age 50 and older. And increasingly, as the baby boomers get older, they are developing their own communities online, dealing with their own issues. So you're right to a degree, but sometimes we can jump to a hasty assumption and neglect what is really going on or what the true potential is. Now, when it comes to social issues, it seems that the youth have the energy to become involved, whereas some of us, as we get older, we may or may not lack that fire and that passion. Just look at the current political campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the massive success of, for example, Barack Obama, primarily from the youth vote and people getting out there and the effective use of social media platforms, in that case, for political change. So, those are the things that we are going to be looking at. And in Philadelphia, we'll be looking at not only for potential economic gain, but for social and political gain and impact also. How to make an impact in your life and the lives of others. And that is truly a worthy goal.
Now, Steve Polite is another one of the people that you have participating in the school. His is a YouTube approach, is it not?
Yes, Steve works primarily with the mastery of YouTube as well as other video sites. And video is a very powerful medium. Earlier, when I gave you a description of the baby harp seal and what happened to them, your mind was able to go in and complete the picture based upon my word choices. When I talked about the coal black eyes, the white seal covered with blood as it bludgeoned by, the mind did that. But sometimes we can be engaged more quickly and accurately by someone seeing a video of what is going on. And elections have been won and lost by the use of video placed upon YouTube. It can be clearly argued that, for example, the last election, the U.S. Senate became controlled by Democrats because of a Republican that was making a political speech, got caught on camera by someone in the crowd, and YouTube uploaded it, and the next thing you know, he's saying, well, I didn't say that, and I didn't do that. And millions of people are going online, and they're seeing him exactly do what he said he didn't do. And consequently, he lost the Republican, he was a Republican candidate, and lost the seat in the Senate to a Democrat. And that was the point that the election essentially turned, and the control of the U.S. Senate turned, one might argue, upon one YouTube video.
Well, certainly the YouTube phenomenon is there and has been extended. At first, it was perceived as just jackass videos for the most part, and then it moved on a little past that, and there's still a proliferation of wasted times. But there are some very nice pieces that are there, very informational. Certainly, as I've done more of this, I've been putting them out, trying to be concise, seeing what goes with it and everything, and you realize it really can have an impact. The aggregator tube mogul has been a real interesting thing for me, because in the space that I did one to YouTube, I can do 10, and all of a sudden they're popping up all over the place. And it gets back to the keywords and the tagging. Maybe you could explain to me and whoever listens how important keywords and tagging is for search engine find results.
Sure. Well, let's take an example of Nadine's reforestation of Haiti. And you would begin to think about, okay, what type of words might people be looking for that might be interested in that issue? Well, obviously reforestation, some reforestation of Haiti, some might be Central America, some might be related to the atmosphere, and I don't really know what they all are without sitting down and researching it. But what you do is you come up with those single words and phrases, and particularly phrases, that people might actually go online and type in that they wanted information for. Now, anyone that is familiar with doing a search on Google and has taken a look at the way the results are displayed will normally see a larger block of items, generally 10 of them, set off covering two-thirds of the page to the left, with a smaller set of items going down the right-hand side and maybe two or three items across the top. Now, the two or three items across the top and the ones going down the right-hand side of what is displayed are things that were paid for by people to have placed there. They are buying advertising, basically, on Google to try to attract people to their website or their blog or whatever their point of reference is. Whereas those that come up in the larger section to the left, about two-thirds of the width of the page, those are what they call organic searches. And people tend to trust, research indicates.
Hello.
People tend to trust what research would indicate, the organic searches, because those are viewed as things that people did not pay to place. They're things that were naturally occurring. And so people, when they're looking for information, will tend to trust those more than the other. Another thing that we're getting into when we're talking about the efforts you've been making recently is the fact that when you take video and you put it in with audio and with other information, such as keywords or tags, the search engines are liking that type of information more than they are a static web page, because it would indicate that it is an area of interest to people from a search standpoint, and it does tend to get ranked higher and position not only in video searches, but just general organic Google searches. And the more videos you have out there, the greater chance you'll have to have your issue before the public.
Now, when you say phrases, in Nadine's situation, I have used, and I do her website, the two keywords, Haiti and trees. Now, if I were to put into the reforesting Haiti as a separate element as well?
You would. You would also put planting trees in Haiti. You might put in need for trees in Haiti. Mm. You might put in Haiti trees.
Mm-hmm.
Haiti reforestation. Haiti crisis.
All right. And so all of those would interact. The searching mechanism basically is just finding matching phrases and words, and then somehow they rank what the content is with those words to see if it's appropriate. I don't know how it works, but I'm really fascinated as I'm seeing results now.
Well, for example, on some of the things that you've been working with me in the last couple of days, the reason I gave you the particular phrases. And, for example, the term boot camp, both as one word and as two words, is because when people search, you have to keep in mind what might they type in, not what is it really called. And a lot of people, if you come to the word boot camp, some people are going to type it in as one word, other people are going to type it in as two. And so it's important that you mark your videos and mark your pages with both variations. Otherwise, you're eliminating part of the audience that might be looking for exactly what you have.
So when there's no space, I mean, it's one word, no matter what the composition of those letters are.
Correct.
Very interesting. Now, I do have, if you would like to share some time with either Charles Heflin or Steve Pollitt, or Kathleen, I've got about 4 minutes with each of those. Would you care to have either one of those people say a few words?
Well, why don't we hear a bit from Charles, because I think he has some things that might be of interest to your audience. And then if we have time, we can hear what Steve has to say.
Okay, very good. We're going to do with Charles Heflin a couple minutes with Dr. Ron Capps, a separate interview, but it ties into what we're talking about. This is Ken English. You're listening to Liquid Lounge on the Blog Talk Radio system. Actually, now, Dr. Capps, we're part of the social radio network, aren't we?
We are, which is another example of something that was an idea that basically you brought to my attention. And after considering it a bit, there is a need for people that are involved in social radio to band together and to form their own network, much like the original broadcasters did back in the 1920s, so that we can support one another, promote one another, promote our efforts, and build a larger audience. And through your wisdom
and your action,
some joint effort, we're going to build and populate the social radio network.
Well, that sounds good. Let's hear a little bit from Charles Heflin, and then we'll come back in.
Hi, folks. This is Ron Capps. A lot of people refer to me as the Niche Prof. And today I've got the opportunity to chat with Charles Heflin of SEO 2020 and also of the Social Marketing Blueprint. Charles will be one of the faculty members with us on the new School of Social Marketing. And I wanted to give you a chance to hear some very insightful comments from a person that some of you may know, but most of you are meeting today for the first time. Charles, it's great to have you on the call today.
Thank you very much for having me, Ron. I appreciate the opportunity.
Since a lot of people don't know that much about you and your background, Charles, would you mind telling them a little bit about where you come from and what brought you to the world of internet marketing and in particular social marketing?
Absolutely. Well, I got started a very long time ago, back in 83 or so, using bulletin board systems when I was in junior high school and chatting back and forth with friends. And then, as the internet became a thing, of course, I wanted to jump all over that. So I've pretty much been involved in online marketing ever since the internet became a household word. So I've come through the ranks. I developed one of the first affiliate programs online that many companies used and followed as a model for affiliate programs. And I've been following trends in affiliate marketing as well as social media for my entire internet career. So it's been interesting to watch how social media has evolved, from just straight forums and then came along blogs and now we have all of these interesting applications like Twitter and Plurk that are popping out of the woodwork that are adding and enhancing to our functions that we can use to engage communities. I've been involved in the trends, watching them. I'm also an educator and teacher. I teach people how to get involved online, both offline and online businesses, and also do a fair amount of consulting work to corporations and private individuals that want to make their mark on the internet.
We've both seen a lot of evolution, and it began to really become accessible beyond the world of Archie and Veronica and the BBSs in the summer of 1994 with the advent of the graphical browser. But who could have guessed then that we would go from maybe a mere million, 1.5 million or so around the globe using it, to now we're talking 1.5 billion people online. So you have a rich experience to share with the folks. Now, you mentioned something I'm only going to touch on very briefly here, but But I think it's very important for the listeners to know, when we're talking about social media and social marketing, we're not just talking about for the internet marketer. We're talking about for the brick-and-mortar businesses. We're talking about for the mid-level businesses and corporate America. Increasingly, these folks are having to come to harness the power of social marketing, basically not only for growth, but in some cases for survival. What are you seeing when you are working with brick-and-mortar businesses, not the traditional online internet marketer, as far as their need and the way to reach out to them for social media and social marketing?
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal, the need that brick-and-mortar businesses have now. I'll just use MySpace as an example. MySpace has a tremendous reach into localities. Like, for instance, here in the Myrtle Beach area where I live, of online adults that have internet access that can be reached through MySpace. So local brick-and-mortar businesses that aren't setting up profiles and networking with their community while they're online, they're missing a huge opportunity to bring in repeat business and, you know, network and foster relationships with their target audience in the local area.
You're listening to Liquid Lounge with Ken English. My guest today is Dr. Ron Capps. Dr. Capps is the niche professor, niche prof, nicheprof.com. We've been talking about the use of social marketing and social media essentially for the last 45 minutes, and we're running down the final quarter hour now. So I'd like to shift back just a little bit as the application to the ocean, because that is really the basis of this particular program, Liquid Lounge, was to focus its attention on things that I have seen at DEMA events. That's a Dive Equipment Marketing Association. It's the trade group for the dive industry. I have to admit I haven't been scuba diving in years, but I remember vividly, just like I can conjure up the image of the baby seal, I can remember diving in the Bahamas at the bottom and with sharks swimming around, and it was just, to this moment, it can be an exciting thing. I don't have to go in the water anymore to recognize that killing 100 million sharks a year, over 75% of it just for their fins, is a bad thing. I don't have to go into the water to see how the impact, or to project what the impact of declining coral reefs around the islands of the Caribbean is going to have on its tourism industry. This particular platform allows us to talk about ocean issues, shark finning, overfishing, things like that. How could it be brought under one umbrella, but just a... Could you summarize a little bit of a few of the ways that an ocean organization could take advantage of social media?
I'd be glad to do that, Ken, but let me begin by asking you a question. Are there films, documentaries, videos that have been done by the National Geographic organization, by the Discovery Channel, by different scientific platforms, that have explored, for example, the issue of the declining coral reef and the impact of hurricanes and fishing and so forth on coral reefs?
Yes, of course there is.
Okay. I knew that because I just watched one over the weekend.
Yes.
But the point is, many people aren't out there looking for those particular issues because they're not part of their conscious awareness. It doesn't mean they don't think they're important, but with so many things vying for their attention every day, a coral reef down in the Florida Keys or in the Caribbean really is not even on my radar, unless someone puts it on my radar by telling me why it's important for me to be concerned with that. And one of the ways you can do that is by propagating the information and let people know, hey, I just saw a great video or just saw a thought-provoking movie on or program on the National Geographic Channel. And you can go view a replay of it here. Or it's coming up tonight. I really think it's important that you watch it. And then all of a sudden, they're tickling my sensibilities. And someone is scratching something and saying, hey, maybe this is important. Wow, I really am kind of concerned about that. I never even thought about it that way. And the way you get that attention is by putting out posts, by putting out releases, by putting out tweets. That's what we refer to, brief messages on Twitter. And that stimulates an awareness. For example, during our call today, I just received a message from someone who was responding to my earlier posts regarding the demographics of older people using the computers online. And there was, she wrote back and she says, yeah, most people don't realize I've been online since many of the people that are talking about were even born. And that's true. But she hadn't really stopped to think about it or share it with other people until I tickled the awareness. And then she was willing to engage in the conversation. Same thing true with coral reef. You know, if you tickle the, you know, imagination and you stimulate the interest, you can get a conversation going, and the more people that become involved in the conversation, the higher the heightened awareness of it becomes. The more people watch the video, the more people that watch the video or the programming, the more people then can become involved in the issue, can contribute to the issue, can speak out on the issue, can contribute funding to the issue. So there's a myriad of possibilities that it opens because you've now made it aware or you put it on the radar screen of an audience.
Well, certainly the communication is essential. And I mean, you've mentioned names of, and maybe just for illustration purposes, you could put out a few, and I'd like you to describe what a microblog is compared to a regular blog, you know, and how they differ, but just some names. I mean, Twitter, and there's Plurk and Bebo, and all of those. I guess the question more is that all of the social networks that are out there have some core constituency, somebody that likes that system. So they've all got a base of audience, and when you join that community and establish a rapport, that's how you expand your influence. Is that correct?
That's correct. But here's the danger and the thing that most people don't realize, Ken. When we're communicating as a human being, we tend to think of things through our eyes, and we tend to keep it focused on the way we are perceiving it. And what we need to adjust to is realize it doesn't matter what we think we're communicating. What really matters is what our audience is receiving and how they're interpreting it. Now, if I were to say that there is a certain platform, X, Y, or Z, and I really don't like that platform. You know, I don't think I'm going to go there that often. Well, I may have some friends out there that love X, Y, and Z. And if I refuse to go there, if I refuse to provide my information to them there, I'm restricting the distribution of my message. So you've got to learn to deliver your message, to deliver your information, not where you would like to have it necessarily, but where your audience can find it, where they like to go, and where they might become willingly engaged in it. For example, a microblog. A microblog is a definition, by definition, a very short message, generally conceived as 140 characters or less. Some of them expand it just a little bit beyond that. And it's an attention-getting post. When people think of things like microblogs or they think of things like Twitter, they tend to look at it and they say, oh, well, that's where they go. And they say, well, I'm having spaghetti day for lunch. Or it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Well, yeah, some people do use it that way, but they're not using it effectively. You do use places like Twitter. You use places like Pounce, P-O-W-N-C-E, places like Tumblr, for sharing a message. For example, I did a telephone interview with Stuart Tan last night, and I thanked him for the interview and posted some information about it online by using one of these networks. And I use a tool called ping.fm, P-I-N-G.fm, and that allows me to go to one place, and I can post my 140-character message or a link to an article or a video that I think is important, and I can click a button that says enter, and that will then distribute that particular post to a wide number of different platforms. It will post it to Twitter. It will post it to Facebook. It will post it to another microblog, Plurk, to Pounce, to MySpace, to LinkedIn, to Tumblr, to Identica, which is a new open source microblog, to Brightkite, to FriendFeed, to Jaku, and the list goes on and on. It's what I call an economy of action. I'm delivering the message I want the audience to get through one channel to the places they are most likely to engage and interact with that message. And I do it by using an online tool that's free called ping.fm.
Well, it's been, that's one of the things that I've adopted. Of course, I haven't signed up to all of the social networks, but every time I look at them and I say, well, if I'm sending to these six, maybe I should add another one. And so the next thing I know, I've got another one. But we're down to the final couple minutes. The Impact Conference is coming up next weekend or two weekends. Let's see, I guess, yeah, a little, 2 weekends, 22nd through the 24th. It's right around the corner. The Niche Prof, NICHEPROF.com is your website. You want to sum up your whole interview in about a minute?
Well, here's speed talking. No. Basically, I was contacted by my friend Ken MacArthur because he knows that I'm showing people how to use these social media platforms to have impact in their lives and the lives of others. And he wanted me to become involved to show the people that he's working with, showing them how to have massive impact, the ways they can use social media and social marketing to achieve it. And I'm giving them a step-by-step blueprint for the things they need to do so that they can go out and have impact on the world and impact in the lives of the others and upon the issues that they find important to them. And that's what it's all about. It's plugging back into the community around you, giving freely to yourself with no expectations of anything else in return, and hopefully making the world a better place.
Well, I couldn't have summed it up better. Thank you very much. I'm sure Santa Claus, who's been listening to the program, got something out of the message and certainly out of the program. And I want to thank you for stopping in the Liquid Lounge with me today. This has been a slightly different path of sorts because in the past I've been really focused on the message from the people in the field, the scientists and the like, to talk about some of the problems. But the shifting of thinking here is real important because every organization could be more effectively conducting an outreach program if they worked social media more effectively, couldn't they?
Absolutely. It does you no good to have a very tremendous message, the greatest scientific report in the world, the most brilliant minds, if you can't connect them to the public at large.
Well, that takes care of that for today. This is Liquid Lounge. Dr. Ron Capps, thank you very much for joining me today and sharing your information. We'll do it again soon. In fact, we are going to do it again soon on Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the School of Social Marketing radio program. So I'll be talking with you then, if not before.
Take care, my friend.
Good day. Have a great day. Drive safely out there on the roads when you leave the lounge. You know, you got to behave yourself out there. This is Ken English. You've been listening to Liquid Lounge, part of the Blue Green Network, also part of the Social Radio Network. The program is focused on the water side. We'll be talking about the DEMA, Dive Equipment Marketing Association convention coming up in Las Vegas this year, hopefully putting together a broadcast, talking with a friend of mine who does an excellent distribution service called Dive Newswire. The Dive Newswire is for trade people involved in the industry. There's a commercial side, a consumer side to it as well that we're going to take a look at and see what we can do with that as well. So until next week for Liquid Lounge, it's Miami, Florida. It's a beautiful day, and I'm heading out. Have a great day.